Hello.
Mr. White?
Yes, sir. How are you?
Ah, okay. I dialed the wrong number, I believe it or not. I thought you were a 401 number. I just, rough day today, rough day. You know, it sucks. I can't believe it. I used to get paid to get laid. Now I got to pay to get laid. Yeah, but you know, I mean, I'm a regular civilian now, so I've been for 20 years. I became a real person. And you know what the terrible thing is? When I was in that world, that business, I was like the missing link. I was a freak. I was the outskirts. We were like the obnoxious, the thorn in the side to society. And that was the 80s. And then I left that world because I said, I, you know what? I don't want to be a freak show anymore. Let me just go back into society. Let me just feel good about good old me. And I left that world to go into society where society was changing at that time with the internet, this, that. And now society is so fucked up because of all the stupid things. Society today is porn with clothes on, and it's more raunchier, and it's so yo-yo-yo out in the open that it takes away all the mystique and all the naughtiness that made it more satisfying when you got to the point where, you know, you felt discreet. And now I'm more civil, and now I'm the odd one out again. It's so strange, but I wouldn't trade it. Because I just stick to, you know, what I feel is right. I mean, I can't even, I don't know. My problem is, and let me tell you, a lot of people with the porn business, a lot of the old timers that are my age and older, they cannot adapt to where the society has gone. See, we live in such an extremity that this is nothing. This is almost like, you know, don't play with me. This is a rubber doll, you know, when we had the real stuff. So a lot of people I really know, they refuse to text. Even Joy Snyder, she won't even text. She won't use her cell phone and very limitedly. I mean, there's almost like a rebelliousness, you know. So I find myself in that category. So anyway, she told me a little bit about you and when she called.
Yeah,
She
so
said
I
that you.
do. Go ahead.
No, she mentioned that at the time when I spoke to her, she mentioned that you were interested in doing some sort of a piece about the movie that she made, you know, that was her signature movie, Raw Talent, which was like, you know, one of the top movies that I was in. And word goes that people thought I, you know, was written about me, but apparently it wasn't written for me, but I fit the bill because it was a really, really all about my life. And then I wound up writing a book about my life that was a very successful book, not financially, but it was successful in 1988 called Raw Talent, that named it after the actual movie. And so forth and everything else. And she just mentioned, she said that you do documentaries.
Yeah, I do a podcast. So once a week, I pick out a movie and I, you know, try to get as much information as I possibly can. It's nearly always a favorite of mine or something that I think more people should see. So, and that's run the gamut from, you know, like really obscure movies starring Meatloaf to RoboCop to, you know, these Canadian comedies, these kind of things.
Well, people
But
are into now what's behind the scenes because reality is really what, you know, it's a pretend camera that's trying to follow people, you know, behind the scenes, but we all know it's all embellished and it's really phony. But what you're doing is really reality without having the camera on the person. So you know, evidently, and they're just revealing, you know, all the nooks and crannies and all the juicy stuff that went on after the word cut or before it, which is really the most fascinating part of that world. Was forget it wasn't the acting, it wasn't the movies, it was that's all, you know, it was all the in between. And that's what I wrote in my book, and that's what made my book so interesting. I wrote what went on behind the scenes.
Yeah,
But Joyce
I
is an
picked up
interesting
your.
lady, isn't she? Did you meet Joyce in person?
I haven't met her in person, no. It took I
Oh
actually was
God, she's an
interviewing.
interesting woman.
I was interviewing Susie Bright, and we were talking about our favorite adult films, and I mentioned Raw Talent. She's like, "Oh, I can."
Susie Bright? Who's Susie Bright?
She used to be the like the what was it called? The sex confidential sex informant or something. The monthly column that they had for, I believe it was Penthouse. I don't think it
Oh,
was
really?
Hustler.
Okay. It sounded
And
familiar, but okay.
she's been around for a long time. The big
So she's in a,
time
so she remembers the
advocate.
80s as well, right?
Exactly. Yeah, she was writing about a lot of this stuff as it was
Oh,
happening.
okay. Well, I might have been under her pen.
Definitely. And she wrote a lot about, she loved Raw Talent 3. She wrote a lot about that. And so we kind of clicked on that. And she's like, oh, I can put you in touch with Joyce. And I was like, oh, great. Because I would love to cover this movie. It is one of my favorites and just one of those movies that stuck with me for all these years. I
Joyce is,
mean,
you know, Joyce is a very interesting woman. She's very Southern, Beau. She belongs like in the movie Cat on a Hot Tin Roof or Streets of Unnamed Desire, Blanche DuBois. You know, she has, but she's you look at her, she's very sexy, but she was very unrevealing, but makes it more, but becomes very revealing because again, you know, you whatever little bit she gives you is like, oh my God, it's almost like a striptease person who doesn't take the glove off. And it's like, forget about the pussy and the tits. I want to see that damn hand. And Joyce always had a way of I don't know if it was a tactic. She just, that's the way she was. And, you know, she's an interest. I mean, I've seen her. I saw her about 3 or 4 years ago. She's living in Bernard Goetz's building, the subway vigilante.
Oh, that's
She's good
ironic.
friends with him. What?
I said, that's ironic since you kind of
She
played
lived in
a.
the, she's good friends with him, too. And she actually
Oh,
made a
wow.
movie about Bernard Goetz. And I played Bernard Goetz in the movie. And we did it in a studio in Corona, Queens, where we actually shot War Talent. There's a place called Adventureland Studios. Still there. Believe it or not, the guy still runs it, Vince Benedetti. And the scene with Bernard Goetz was I play Bernard Goetz, I'm on a subway, and I'm reading a newspaper, and three black girls come up to me say, and they say, hey, man, you got $5? And I pick up the newspaper, and I have a semi-erection, and I say, no, but I got 5 inches. And then it's a big sex scene. But ironically, yeah, Bernard Goetz, he lived right on top of her, and they were, like, very chummy. But she was an interesting woman. She really was. She kept the business, can I be honest, she kept it clean because she was not a raunchy woman. Although you may look at her and say what you'd like to do with her raunchily because she had big bosoms. They're very, I mean, all natural big bosoms. I mean, her breasts were better than any breasts on the set. So it was almost like, whoa. But she was a real sweet woman. And I loved her, you know, and she's one of the top people in my life forever, you know, like family.
That's great.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't know more about her business, but she's still, you know, and she knows my heart, and you know, she calls me once in a while, and she called tell me a little bit about this, you know. I don't know where I could fit in. I mean, I don't know where, you know, but sometimes I miss it. I don't miss what I had to go through personally, but I do miss the excitement. And I miss, but you know what it is? It's a timepiece of when I was living in that, in the 80s. You know, I guess, how old are you, if I may ask?
39.
All right. Well, you kind of would understand. In the 80s, there was no internet. There was no cell phone. People got along from word of mouth. You know, you mailed a letter. You waited for the letter to be delivered. You waited for the call at your house. Sorry, you had a beeper. That was the big thing. Everybody relied on each other emotionally. It was not all this accessibleness. It's so different. It was so family back then. I mean, it was almost like we had lookout people like a block away that would make signals to people a block earlier to let you know if the police were coming. I mean, there was no, you know, it was so ancient, but that's what kept us all sane because of the world, the work that we'd done. We were prostitutes, and, you know, when you think about it, we really didn't care. We really didn't want to be that. We lied to ourselves and became that, and then we justified it. But what kept us together, we were family. We really were. Even if you didn't, and you know, you don't have to get along with family to love them. So we fought, but we loved each other. It's funny, the people that who you're screwing in the afternoon, all right, you're hanging out at night doing drugs and crying about loneliness and lack of love at night. It's so strange, but it was so bonding. Today, it's corporate. I don't even know what it's all about.
Right. Sad. Yeah, I wanted to call you last week, but then I wanted to reread your book because I picked it up back in 1990.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Yeah, I picked it up. I think it was like the second edition hardcover. Picked it up forever ago. Read it back then, and then reread it over the weekend. And it's just as riveting now as it was, you know, 22 years
Very
ago.
Very interesting because I said a lot of things back then that were so true, even though I couldn't follow it myself. Willpoweringly, I couldn't do it myself, but I had a notion, and I understood. I mean, I look back, and sometimes I say, what happened to that, you know, that kid? But, you know, I lived an adventurous life. I lived in a lifestyle every guy wish he had. You know, I spent money as quick as I made it. I guess you could say, in a very indirect way, I was on top of the world somewhat. I got into hobnob with the big stars because, you know, they wanted to be close to the porn people. without being revealing. Today, it doesn't matter. If one person, I mean, Ron Jeremy is legit as could be, to be on the Jay Leno show. But back then, we hung out with the big stars, but nobody knew. But they all wanted to, and we fucked in all their homes. I mean, I fucked in Aretha Franklin's house and Robert Duvall's house, and I fucked in Joe Cocker's bed. And I mean, but these, you'll never know that. I mean, these are things you'll never. Today, it's almost like it would be an honor for a star to say, "Hey, Katy Perry, yeah, you are Jeremy, fucked in my bed." So it was, and then I was married to a little girl in the Addams Family. I mean, and Lisa Loring, she was very popular. She was on the soap opera One Life to Live. As the World Turns, and she knew everybody, so everybody was coming over the house, Bruce Willis and Meg Ryan, and I mean, they were all her friends, you know, so I got to kind of hang out and then sleep with Mac people, and oh my God, it was on and on, Danny Aiello, you know, she knew everybody because, you know, she was a big soap opera star, she was Meg Ryan's sister on the show, and she dated Christopher Reeve and all those people, but you know, it was exciting, and I guess I was too young to realize that it was bullshit. But as I see life today, life is more bullshit in reality, as it seems to be in life today, than it was in the menagerie or in the illusion of what we lived in the 80s. Oh, my God, I just don't even know where we are anymore. I don't know. It's not the same for me. But you know what I got? I got great memories. I go to bed with them at night. That's something nobody else have. And, you know, so, but anyway, what I do with my life now, I drive kids for a living. I work with handicapped kids. I've been doing it for 20 years. And I make a decent living, nothing extraordinary. And I just wait for people that are close to me to die so I'm in their will so I can build up some capital.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's but I'm great. Just, you know, I make a decent living. What I make in 1 week is what I used to make in 1 day. And I spend it in one night, and I have a lot more to show, and I, you know, I'm in better situation as far as, you know, but back then we all had a death wish, and, you know, it was all that crazy. Well, we survived it, and a lot of people didn't, but I miss my old gang, and I go back to California sometimes just to see them, you know, and it's so sad, because it'll never come back. Yeah, it's just, porn is a fact. You know, Francis Coppola was one of the big fans of porn.
Really?
Big fans. Oh, my God, Francis Coppola? He came up to me at the awards one day, and he looked at me, and he said, you are my favorite actor. I said, honest, I mean, come on, Francis Coppola, the Godfather. I mean, my God. He was one of the biggest porn buffs, porno fans. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. And Warren Beatty, another one, big time. And believe it or not, as I got the inside scoop, because, you know, when you work with a lot of people in porn, you're working with a lot of people that are going under different names so they can work because they're all SAG members. They don't want to get caught by SAG. So I picked up so many things. I found that from a lot of people. Walt Disney, the biggest pornographer ever. the biggest, filthiest, disgusting pervert. But that just goes to show, because I always said perversion is a fine line before, you know, when you have talent and you have creativity, because you have to have your mind be able to expand. But it was... yeah, it was just crazy. I mean, it was wild. I mean, it was a different world. And, you know, it was a secretive thing, and it'll never, ever come back. And yeah, I guess that's the way it is. I mean, I guess ball players could do the same thing. They could talk about the good old days.
So,
raw talent. I mean, so which one are you going to talk about? Remember one, two? I mean, I think there was three of them, right?
Right, yeah. I'll probably end up talking about all three, but definitely going to concentrate on the first one just because, you know, it harkens back to that real, for me, golden age of pornography where, you know, shot on film, you've got much plot going on. I mean, you know, how many...
Hey, don't forget, we didn't get a million takes because, you know, film was expensive.
Exactly.
And don't forget, you know, we had to fight for time because we were always looking over for the comps over our shoulders. You know, so, and it was always so much to shoot because you're always cramming everything. And so, and you know, don't forget, everybody that shot, you know, porno might, the acting was shabby. We all know that, unless there were some good actors. My rap was I was a good actor in that world. I studied and the whole bit. But the people that shot the movies, they were the best. I mean, people, they were working on Rocky and, you know, coming off Rocky 3 and, you know, working with us at night. And, yeah, it was wild stuff. These are real professional people. I mean, these were the top, you know, so that's what made porn sometimes look even more sillier is when it was so professionally shot and then poorly acted, as we know, you know, a lot of the stereotyping acting. So, you know, it would have been better if it was poorly shot and then the acting wasn't so good and then it would kind of, you know, blend. But Joyce had a way of, like I said, making it very polite. And she had a very, very civil way of doing something that, you know, could be unsaid. But she didn't direct, you know, she just was there and her presence. She was my porn mommy, as I always tell her. I'm sure she told you she was my porn mommy.
Yeah, and there's not too many. There's not too many porn films that have karate fights in the middle of them.
No, because, and you know, Joyce, what she tried to do, she tried to take a movie and add a little bit of everything, and she wanted to try to make it as, you know, as up to par and up to snuff. And hey, well, I remember. I mean, I had to learn. I mean, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I mean, not that I kind of faked it kind of well, but yeah, we were learning, and it made it feel like we were doing something beyond just fucking. Yeah, Joyce put a little bit more integrity. Well, that's what I'm saying. She's a self-regarded woman. She's not, you know, she's not the kind of woman that you look at her and, like, you know, she's slutty and, you know, I mean, she may be, you know, behind closed doors, but she had a very self-respecting, a very polite, you know, regard for herself. And her movies came that way, too. They were, you know, they didn't come out total raunch. I mean, they were just, they were able to. There was a style about her films, with the few that she did. There was a certain style. It wasn't like she put her name on anything that, you know, it didn't matter. You know, somebody could take a dump on a woman's face and say, I love you.
Right, right.
But, I don't know. Where do I fit? I mean, do you want me to cook breakfast for you guys while you...
I just, you know, I'm just trying to get, you know, what your memories were as far as that one goes.
Oh, absolutely.
And... you know, how it differentiated between that and some of the other films that you were in. I mean, because you were in some great stuff.
I did a lot of work. It was a fuck factory. And, you know, don't forget, it wasn't so much about, you know, well, I took pride in what I did. I did because I went to, you know, the Neighborhood Playhouse. Uh-huh. I studied over there. I went to HB Studios. I went to the Neighborhood Playhouse. I worked at the Actors Playhouse in Greenwich Village. I mean, I wanted to be a regular actor. And I got on One Life to Live, and I was being very harassed because I was a real pretty boy, and it was hard for me, and I didn't want to give up my tail to just any guy because it wasn't what I was into. And believe it or not, even when I was in porn, I met a guy in Palm Springs who was the casting director of 20th Century Fox. You look him up. His name is Lee Wallace. He actually cast Sound of Music and, you know, a bunch of stuff for 20th. He was a flame, and he wanted to meet me, and it was a guy named Chuck Vincent. Chuck Vincent's another very well-respected name in the porn industry. I mean, way above even Joyce. I mean, Chuck was gay, yet he made movies that were not so raunchy and more stylish, and he died a long time ago, but I loved him. I mean, he's one of the main people in my early career, you know, that really got me going and believed in me, but... he turned me on to some guy out in Palm Springs, and the guy, you know, he said, listen, you don't have to fool around with the guy, see what he wants. And so I hung out with the guy for a week. I mean, it was terrible. The guy was coming on. You're going to read about it in the book. I mean, you're going to know. His name is Lee Wallace. But believe it or not, I had a contract for Three's Company to appear in 9 episodes with John Ritter and the other cast members, and I were going to, and he was very good friends with Talkin' Toft, the guy of the president of CBS, I forgot it, Fred Tarnoff or something like that.
Brandon Tarkin-Toft?
That's right. And he had a contract, and I was going to appear in 9 episodes, and I was going to be the porno star, live down the block. My name was going to be Stud Butler, and... I wrote in the book, I just couldn't allow myself to be with him the way he wanted. He wanted to be my slave and vice versa, and I couldn't do it. And already I had a bit of a name as Jerry Butler, but, you know, who knows where I would have been. I know John Travolta went that route, and Eric Estrada, and, you know, I just couldn't. And like I said, I don't condemn anybody with anything, but, you know, it was very tough, and his name was very precious, and I just left his house one night, and, it's the whole story's in the book and everything. I sort of settled in the porn world because that was like my family, and, I mean, how could anybody harass me to have sex? They paid me to have sex, so at least I got something out of it, but it was a fascinating world. It really was, and I knew it. I knew what we had. A lot of people didn't know what we had. I always knew it. I felt it. I knew it, and you'll see when you read the book, you'll know that I captured something that was going on in life. I just was able to feel it. And like I said, I'm pretty amazed by what I wrote. I used a lot of metaphors, the guy that you remember a movie called not Richmond High. It was one of the Harrod Experiment. You
remember the movie? Oh, okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. John Johnson's first movie, John Johnson, you know, from Miami Vice. Well, the guy who wrote that movie is the co-writer of my book with me, Robert Rimmer. Yeah, he was a big pornographer too, so he was able to put a lot of things and professionalism into the book. And then I toured the country, and I was with my ex-wife, and you know, we were the Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt of our day. I mean, we were it. If there was going to be a reality show that started, we would have had it. It was us. But it didn't happen. It didn't happen until, you know, the 90s, the realities. But Lisa and I, we were on every tabloid, every TV show, and we did it all. Sally Jesse 15 times, Geraldo, and I was actually scheduled to be on Larry King. My first interview was going to be Larry King. And I'm sorry, what's your first name again?
Mike.
Mike. And Mike, mm-hmm. my first show was going to be Larry King. And Larry King, all week, was saying, and stay tuned for Thursday. Jerry Butler from home, from Brooklyn, Porto stuff, my hometown is going to... And I was all, oh, my God, this is it. I'm going to, you know, the book's going to make $1 million. And I was getting ready to leave for Washington because that's where Larry was. It was about 1 a.m. I get a call from Buffalo because that's where the book is from, Prometheus Books. I get a call from my publisher, Lynette, and she says, the show was canceled. I said, what? She called me at 1:00 a.m. I had to get up at 5 a.m. to L.A. time to go to the airport. I said, what? She said, didn't you hear what happened? I said, no. She says, oh, my God, you know, Iraq went into Kuwait and took over. I said, oh, motherfucker, you believe this? And Larry King, you know, they preempted everything. Yeah.
Right.
So,
right.
Oh, God, yeah, fucking Iraq. I was going on, I had the full hour, too. Nobody ever gets the full hour of Larry King. It was nobody, only presidents. I had the full hour. It was incredible. I mean, I knew. And Larry King in the 80s was the biggest thing in the world, Mike. I mean, he was bigger than any show. Yeah, the biggest. Yeah. Larry King was it. I mean, there's a million. Yeah, he was the biggest guy. And I had the show, and it would have really propelled me. But, you know, that's the way it was. And so, but Lisa and I, we did all the shows. We slept all over the place. We were a traveling show. And, you know, they all wanted to know about us. We were like, we were a circus. And we made fools of ourselves and got paid for it. And we did the drugs. We hung out with everybody. And, yeah, and it was a life. It was a gypsy life. We lived a very caravan gypsy life. But it's still interesting, you know, getting away from the cops and partying and running to that, you know, here, running there. And it was, you know, again, your life wasn't... How ironic. I was just going to say, your life is not exploited in the 80s as much as it is today.
Right.
Today, but... So I went to the bank. I found out my whole bank account was brought down to zero. Somebody got my identity, my numbers, and withdrew all the money out of my fucking bank, my checking account.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
But I mean, yeah, I think I'm gonna get it back. Oh, it's only a couple of, you know, it's not a whole lot, but I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, that stuff wouldn't have gone on in the 80s. I mean, you know, it's just too savvy. It's too electronically inclined. There's a song. And I used to listen to it when I was in the 60s, 70s, and especially the 80s, because I knew something was going on where life was going to change. It was called In the Year 2525. I don't know if you like oldies.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember that one.
Right. In the year 2525. And I would listen to that. I love the song personally, but in the 80s, I would sing it. I would hear it, and it would shake me up because I felt it coming. I didn't know what was coming, but I knew. You know, the 60s and 70s and 80s were very similar in so many ways, but after the 90s, the internet, it's just such a different world. You know, everybody's just, they're in a different world, a different state. You know, it's just that everything's just different.
Right.
But driving home, and, you know, if you need to get a hold of me for any reason, you know, to tell you the truth, you know, when I talk about the world of business, I mean, I love it because it brings me right back there. And, you know, when I speak to somebody with a good heart, and I know you have to have a good heart, because Joyce told me so.
Well, you know, I'd like to think so.
Yeah, I know. And I, you know, I trust that. And like I said, I will spill it all over the table for you. Just don't wipe it up. Let it soak into the grains of the wood. And hopefully maybe, you know, you can capture that world. And like I said, you know, here's the funny thing, Mike. I go to the gym I'm 52. I take good care of myself. I really do. I mean, I work out. I mean, I got all my hair. I mean, I look fantastic for my age. I really do. I mean, and I go to the gym. I work out. And, yeah, I got to hear the young guys talking their bullshit about, oh, this girl, that girl, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I'm, like, different. I see life different. You know, to me, intimacy is not fucking. It's emotional and companion. You know, I became more of a drip. But I found out what's more important. So when I hear the young guys hear my philosophy and they don't know who I am, hey, who the fuck is this guy, you know? Who is this guy talking to this kid, you know? And I tell him, hey, guy, listen, I'll tell you what. Go home, go Google or Yahoo Jerry Butler. I don't say porn. I just say, but I said, not the black singer now. You know, I don't want them thinking I'm the black singer. I said, just Google the actor, Jerry Butler. And when I see guys again at the gym, they come up to me and they say, they call me God. They call me God, Mike. They say, you the man. Now, everything I say is golden. And I tell them, listen, I earned what I say, and I earned what I got because of what I let learn through wisdom. I said, that's all. I said, I should see life a little different. Very similar to one little story I tell you. And, oh, is this one Raw Talent? This is very interesting. It's in the book. Last day on the movie, we had Raw Talent was a 10-day movie. There was a lot of work that went on in Raw Talent. Last scene was at a big office building where I'm playing a waiter, and they rented out this little restaurant on the are you in the city, by the way?
I'm in Detroit.
Oh, you're in Detroit? Oh, wow, okay. So anyway, but there's a big building on 57th Street, and they rented out the downstairs at the restaurant, and they had like an hour, and we just had an hour to shoot the scene. So I get down to the office building where they're going to shoot the scene in the restaurant, and I'm sitting on these big row of steps. I mean, about like 75, 100 steps that lead up right into this tremendous skyscraping building. It's a Friday, and I'm sitting there with a cup of coffee, and I got an army jacket on from the movie that I'm wearing, and I'm just sitting there, and I'm exhausted, and I am tired because it was a long movie, and I had the lead and whatever, and I'm sitting there, and I'm drinking my coffee, and I'm all protecting myself from the cold and the dampness and my. And all of a sudden, it's a workout, you know. I mean, it works out, you know, and, you know, 5 o'clock. Everybody's shooting out and, you know, running around. And five people end up right by me, two guys, three girls, and they're just talking about what they're going to do for the weekend. And, you know, where are we going to go? You know, and they just, you know, they weren't one of those people that were walking down the steps to the train. They just were discussing what they're going to do. So they look down, the two guys. I could feel them, and they're looking down, and they're kind of like, who the fuck is this guy? You know, homeless guy, okay? Mm-hmm. And they look down, and all of a sudden they were, like, laughing, and they say, who the fuck is this fucking guy? And the other guy says, fucking homeless. And I'm wearing an old, beat-up army jacket. I have a hood on. I got a cup of coffee in my hand. And just then, ironically, Mike, the truck pulls up with all the equipment for the cameras. And this, because we were running, you know, we had a short time to shoot the last scene. Boom, pull right up. They're pulling the cameras off the truck, blah, blah, blah. So now the guys and the girls, oh, what's going on? They're going to shoot a movie here. Oh, my God. You know, they're excited. So now the director comes up to me. And he's got a script, and he's got the rewrites, whatever. And he puts it in my hands. Jerry, we got a rewrite for the scene. Now I hear, oh my God, he's an actor. He's an actor, you know. Now I'm important. So this is all in the book. This is a beautiful, this is one of my favorite parts. And now the guy comes up and goes, oh, my God, you're in the movie. You're an actor. Who are you? I got up. I said, fuck you, motherfucker. You want to show? I got right in his face. Fuck you, you motherfucking cocksucker. Fuck you, 5 minutes ago I was nothing but a homeless fucking piece of shit. You were fucking on the spit on top of my head. Now I'm a somebody because I'm an actor? I said, get out of here before I fucking kill you. And I'll put it on film. They ran so fast, but I was so pissed. Because it's like, oh, now I'm a somebody. And that's when I saw it. Phoniness. I saw, you know, and I was revealing it back then. Today, the world, phoniness, Kim Kardashian, Jersey Shore, how everything's so fake, it's embellished. It's not even reality. It's not. I mean, how does the camera know that it's going to end up down the block and that's where the girl's going to get the run in her stocking and she's going to period dripping down her leg at the same, you know, it's like people don't understand. It's like when I watch Survivor Man or some of those Survivor shows, Mike, and I see the guys climbing up the mountain, but the camera's showing him climbing up from a down position. So obviously the cameraman got up there. He's the real survivor, man. I mean, he's the real fucking hero. And people just get lost. They don't even understand that there's a camera on top of the mountain. So somebody had to get up that fucking mountain. And it probably was the camera guy shooting down. I mean, it's so staged. And, you know, anyway. Yeah. But that's how it is, you know. And it to me, the whole reality world today is so flimsy. It, believe it or not, and I never thought I was ever going to say this, it gives old porn a black eye. Because porn back in the 80s, we all know that it was, oh, brother, porn movie. But it had its place. Today's fucking, you know, I mean, the people are gorgeous and beautiful and the more money involved and commercials involved, but it's so phony. It's so phony. It's disturbing. It gives porn. I don't know about new porn. I don't really watch. I don't really get into the new porn. I can't jerk off to a woman who's full of tattoos and I can't find her body. I'm coming to tattoos, you know. Then I, you know, and what I do, you know, if I go to a tattoo parlor and I see a guy with tattoos, I get pre-cum. I can't do that. I can't jerk off to a girl with tattoos. So, but old porn, it gave old porn a black eye. Mm-hmm. But, Mike, I'm driving home. I'm going to get some dinner. If you know, if you need, you know, to set some time or whatever, you call the shots. You know, it's fine. I'm really having a good time doing this.
Well, you know, right now, I've got a very open schedule. I mean, it sounds like you probably do like a 9-to-5 kind of gig or,
oh my God, I could give you all you want. I go up to, Connecticut on the weekends. I got a little boy up there. I got him on the internet. I'm only kidding. I used to date his mom. And, his mom and I, we didn't make it, but he was such a great little boy. I met him when he was 3 and he don't have a dad. And I became like a surrogate dad. And I go up there and he's 8 years old now. And, his penis is bigger than mine, so now he knows I'm certainly not his dad. So, you know, it's a tough go. No, but I go up there and I spend a little time with him, and you know, he's my own little world. And so I'll have the whole weekend, basically, you know, and just, you know, he does his little thing, and I'll be able to be kind of in my own little world up there. And so, you know, I'm there from Saturday morning 10 o'clock till Sunday afternoon. You want to give me a call? Or if not, if you want to call me any time during the week, till Friday past 7 o'clock when I finish work and everything else, I gladly look to share a little time and a little, you know, that with you and everything.
That sounds great.
Believe me, to give is to receive. It brings me to a good point. It really does. And like I said, I mean, this is involving Joyce and, you know, that's fine with me.
Cool. Okay, yeah, I'll probably give you a call on Sunday afternoon.
No doubt. And, you know, you got Prince Fielder now. You know, you guys got a nice little ball club now. Tigers, you know. Are you a Tiger fan?
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. We actually did pretty good last year between the Tigers and
Lions. Oh, yeah, you got very close. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No doubt. Hey, you know what? It was the last game that screwed up. I mean, you know, with Texas. I mean, you guys were coming back, but the guy Cabrera hurt himself. That's the whole bad thing, this, right? One of the top guys hurt himself, and that's why they had to get Fielder, because he's going to be out for a long time. I think it's Cabrera, you know, the other kid. Yeah. But in Detroit, I was in Detroit with the book. I did the AM Detroit show. I was on AM Detroit. I did them all. And that I did with Lisa, actually, my ex-wife, and we were in Detroit. And, we did all those shows, AM Boston, AM Philadelphia, we did everything. Yeah, the book was successful for what it was. It got published. It was very hard to get a published book from a porn star. Nobody. I was the first one, roughly. There was a few others but they didn't have any major sponsor publishers. But Broad Talent is the first one. Then everybody else came in to play, you know, and I mean, even Ron Jeremy got a really good deal. I mean, Ron Jeremy is like, you know, he became the face of porn. He's like totally like legitimized that whole business. And, you know, he's an interesting person. I love him. I went to see him about a year and a half ago. He lives in Monica Lewinsky's building, the one that fucked Clinton.
Wow.
Yeah. But he owns 3 condos. He's a millionaire. He did really well. He lives in Madonna's brother lives in that building, but I think he got kicked out. But Monica Lewinsky lives up on his floor. But he legitimized himself. But I tell you one thing about Ron, and, you know, this is all true. We were talking, and, you know, and he became who Ron is. I mean, when I left, Ron was maybe a bit more higher than me in celebrity. But we were right up there basically the same. As far, I mean, anybody who looked at him, they recognized me, vice versa. Mm-hmm. And then as the years went on, I became more like, Who is this guy? I think I know him. And I tell people, you owe me money, you know, because they can't place the face. Or they'll say, where do I know you from? A guy come to me in the supermarket. I said, listen, guy, I've been in your house more than your ex-wife. What? I said, yeah, I've been in your bedroom more than your ex-wife. What the fuck? I said, I was a porn star. That's where I fucking know you. So, you know, a lot of people, they forgot. Yeah, I have been more, you know, I'm that guy you can't place the face anymore, but which is good. I got my privacy. But anyway, right. When I was talking to Ron, and I believe him. He said, Jerry, you know what? I envy what you are. And yet I look at him and envy him because he made it very successful with money and everything. And he's living the Hollywood life in so many ways. Because even though I live a very modest world, I mean, it's, you know, tough times. He says, you know what? You got married. You had a kid. Well, even though I never had a legit kid, I do have a legit kid, but I didn't raise him. But I raised another son from a second marriage. And he said, you know, just that's what he always wanted to be able to do, just live like a regular life and get married. But he can't. He's too bigger. He's bigger than himself to accept himself what he is. So he lives in that celebrity world, and you know, it's a lonely feeling. But it fulfills him in one way. But I know deep down he's a lonely guy, you know. And that's what I left to try to get for myself. And I succeed a lot. I mean, I'm content with myself. I loved me. I didn't like me. Mm-hmm. I like it though. Yeah, but when you're in that world, it's tough to like yourself. You love yourself, but it's tough to like yourself because nobody wants to be a porn star. Today, everybody wants to be a porn star, Mike. It's cool. With all the rap, and the disc, with all the hip-hop, it's cool. But back then in the 80s, nobody wanted to be a porn star. I mean, right. You fell into that world. And you lied. You changed your name. Don't forget, it came first. You went out in the movie theaters. I mean, my God, that all happened. I mean, you know, you only hope that nobody saw the fucking movie, you know, and if you made a movie, it came out 8 months later, you know, and then, of course, VHS came out and all that other stuff, and then people started getting, you know, snagged, but, and nobody really wanted, you know, when you're a little kid, you know, you don't want to be a, you know, I want to be an astronaut, I want to be a fireman. Nobody says, I want to be a porn star. Today, these kids will say that. They'll say, I want to be a porn star at 6, 7 years old. Because, you know, we addressed, you know, the importance and the value and the you know, credibility about, you know, what it is to be famous, however you are. But back then, we only fell into that world. And then we just bought it with ourselves. That's why there was a lot of bitterness and loneliness. And we fucked by day. Isn't that funny? The girl you stuck your dick in her ass and fucked her ass and pulled out shit on your dick. By afternoon, you were hanging out at night, hanging a drink, having a drink or doing coke. Crying and getting emotional with that girl. That was the most wonderful thing about what it was, you know, because that was the true intimacy when we would just get high and we would cry to each other and, you know, kind of put our whole lives together and embrace and give each other support. Yeah, we lived the gypsy life. It was fascinating. It really was. It was a family. It really was. I mean, I could never go back. I went back. You know, when I saw Ron and I went back to see some people and I can't live like the way they live. And yet I used to live just like them, but they're still my family. You know, it's very interesting. It really is. You know, it's almost like when an athlete makes it and he goes back to the hood and he knows that he can never go back to the hood, but he's got ties to it and he just, you know, gets emotional. I'll always have it. But Mike, I'm getting on the highway. When I get a bad spot, listen, I have your number. So call me whenever you want to continue, whatever you need to hear. It'll be my pleasure. It really will, Mike.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time tonight, sir. I appreciate
it. Mike, call me again, like I said, you know, just to say whatever, and you know, and add, and if you want to pretend you had amnesia or something like that, or dementia, and you say, Paul, I don't remember a thing you said, it's great. You know why? Because it does a lot for me. It brings up some really good times, and I don't mind sharing that with good people. Thanks a lot, Mike.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.